So we will begin our the first class of this section 1, 2, and 3 of the pastime of Rukmini Devi and her kidnapping by Krishna and her capturing the attention of the Lord. Because as I was explaining, this is very important for us also. We need to get Krishna's attention on us. Otherwise, how are we going to make any spiritual advancement? We may think that I can make spiritual advancement by doing this thing and that thing, by practicing this way and that way. So Krishna is, he's sort of like there, and I do some service for him. And if I have some difficulty, something goes wrong, then I pray to him and call out to him and appeal to him, and he helps me, and then I say, thank you, I've got it now, everything's okay again, thank you very much. And off I go again on my service. But this morning I was reading a section where one devotee in Gorakhpur in India, Srila Prabhupada had given a lecture, and they asked a very subtle question. And sometimes subtle questions, Srila Prabhupada didn't always seem to catch the meaning of the English. And sometimes he responded instead to the subtle nature of the person who was asking the question. So this person asked this question, is it that when we change bodies at the time of death, does it sort of happen kind of naturally? Are there, you know, is it just sort of like, you know, going on and it sort of just happens? What are the symptoms? So that's a little bit of a subtle question. And so Srila Prabhupada answered him very strongly. And he said to him, first of all, he pointed out how you're changing your body all the time. Every moment you're changing your body. Do you see it? Do you recognize it? And the devotee started to get a little bit nervous of his question, because Srila Prabhupada sounded very strong. And he could do this. So he went on like this, explained to this devotee that you are completely under the laws of nature now, at this moment. The moment where, as I was reading it, I was feeling quite in control of myself. So the Prabhupada goes on and he says to him, he says that the power to walk is even given by the Lord. If he withdraws that power, you cannot even walk. So as I read this, I was thinking, oh, this again puts us back into our proper state of mind, that I'm actually constantly dependent on the Lord, rather than that somehow or another in difficulty I depend on him and the rest of the time I'm quite able to do everything in my own way. So this particular section of this lila of Rukmini's capturing the attention of the Lord deals with her unwanted difficulty. And we too, if we look at our lives, every one of us can see that we also have so many unwanted difficulties. They may be temporary ones that come over us day by day, or they may be something very chronic. They may be to have to do with the fact that it's difficult for us to fully, wholeheartedly practice our Krishna consciousness. They may have to do with our family and others and the pressures that they provide in our lives. They may have to do with our health or our mental state or our relationships with our friends. So many areas of our life are prone to difficulty. So as we hear about Princess Rukmini and her dealing with difficulty, we're asked to try and imbibe something that is essential for us in our sadhana practice. Because she is she's the goddess of fortune herself. So she's not going to make mistakes. She's not going to be covered by the type of illusory potency that we are covered by. We are covered by the maya, mahamaya, external maya that causes us to feel anxiety, to try to measure everything with our intelligence. Is this better than this? Is this good? And we try to measure God as well. Is he really like this? And how big is he? And Dr. Frog, as Srila Prabhupada points out, is really us. You know, when somebody says, I've just seen the Atlantic Ocean to a little frog in a well, he says, how big is it? And then the other frog says, it's just unbelievably, it's just like indescribably big. And then the little frog says, is it? And he gets his intelligence working, or he gets onto the computer and he works out the largest possible number. Is it this, 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 and this? And the other frog says, no, you're just wasting time doing this. You'll never understand the unlimited nature of the amount of water in the ocean by way of your own logic and your own faculties. There's a different method for understanding. You have to have experience. And if you don't have personal experience, you have to hear from somebody who does, because they have the best opportunity to convey to you what they're trying to share with you. And then, to hear properly, you actually have to surrender. And what does surrender mean? It means that you mentally put down all of your reservations, all of your opinions, all of your everything for a moment, and you allow that sound vibration to actually enter, to penetrate beyond the layers of mind, intelligence, and so forth, and actually enter into your consciousness, into the heart. And I was just thinking, when I was watching the video last night, the first one was pictures of Srila Prabhupada and a few isolated comments that he made, and it was put together by those who had not met him. The Pandavasena young men, so they did not personally meet Srila Prabhupada, and they chose some very endearing, wonderful transcendental photos of him and comments. But then for me, when I actually saw Prabhupada speaking, I became a little nervous, because he's so grave. Did you notice? He's so grave. He doesn't even take in the people who are there. He never did. You know, like when we speak, we not learn, you know, good speaking skills and how to influence people and how to do this and how to make the all these things we know. But Srila Prabhupada didn't do anything like that. He closed his eyes and he spoke the absolute truth to whomsoever was there, way over their heads. And he didn't care. Because he had, his consciousness was on who he was trying to please. His consciousness was upward. And because we have not met Krishna, our consciousness tends to be towards those who are here. But he was not like that. He didn't defer to his audience or try to make them understand. He presented, here it is, this is the truth. Not a shadow of doubt. Not a moment of compromise. Here it is, there. And I can tell you for a fact, it was incredibly unnerving to be in the audience of people who were listening to Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes, if you're in the right consciousness, it was very enlivening and invigorating. But if your consciousness slipped a little left or right, which is always doing, towards me and mine and my mind and how I feel and so forth, then suddenly you're confronted with this person who's only speaking of the absolute truth, has no me, mine, family, attachments, envy, doubt, fear, nothing like that. Just, this is the truth, take it. And I remember many times feeling very intimidated, like I can't go outside afterwards and feel quite threatened by what Srila Prabhupada was speaking, felt nervous after he spoke. And so many times his words would not penetrate through. They would hit my mind, and my mind would respond one way or the other. I don't know about this. Can I really do this? You know, what does this mean to me? Is he asking me to change something? I can't be more than I am. On and on and on and on, the mind would do its ramblings. And sometimes it would go through the intelligence, and I would think, do I really believe this? You know, have I really... You know, and I'd have some issue of faith. And then sometimes, generally he would visit Melbourne for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days maximum. Usually it was like that. And sometime I noticed in the 4 times I saw Srila Prabhupada in Melbourne, There'd be at least one or two times, so I began to expect that they would be there, when all my defensiveness, it almost like it reached a point of maximum, maximum defensiveness. Like, I can't cope with this. It's too much. I don't know if I want it. When Prabhupada was physically present and laughing and talking, it was different. But when he sat on the Vyasasan, closed his eyes and presented the absolute truth and said things like, if you are engaged in any sense gratification, you will not be able to understand God. It is not possible. And then he opened his eyes and looked at you all. I think, my gosh, what am I doing? I'm doing this and that and that and this. How am I going to understand anything? So when that anxiety reached its ultimate point of panic, for me, this was my personal experience, there was a breakthrough. Before then, I heard casually, I heard something, I heard a little blissfully, oh, that's nice, but it didn't really penetrate. But when everything felt like I was becoming now desperate, he had me like right in the corner. And of course, he wasn't doing that. He was sitting, speaking the truth with his eyes closed. He wasn't looking at me and saying, now I want to say something about you. Nothing like that. But Krishna is there and Krishna is here. And Krishna is the one who is pointing the finger at us. And not pointing the finger at us out of anger and envy and dissatisfaction with us, or like sometimes in the Christian concept that, you know, God is in the church and you don't come on Sunday, you go out and go to the gym and go to the beach, you know, and so he's angry with you. No. But he's opening, trying to open our eyes, and he's pointing the finger at how we are keeping them tightly shut, closed. And all of a sudden you feel gulp. And then when it reaches its maximum, you open them. Because now you're really in the corner. And this is what I would experience with Srila Prabhupada. And then there'd be a moment where you would open up, almost like desperate, almost like crying by that point. You open up and Srila Prabhupada's words would suddenly go through in such an incredibly potent, calming, reassuring, sweet way. And they would penetrate and you'd suddenly realize I'm surrounded by layers and layers and layers of stuff. And somehow or another, it has come through to me. And it was very powerful, and that would be the moment of that visit. And after that, the mind didn't do quite as it had done before. It was a little subdued. And then you would feel immensely grateful to Srila Prabhupada for having taken on the fight against my resistance, my mind, my intelligence, not others, but he'd taken on me, and he had released me. So this is the power of the hearing process. And this is what I saw yesterday when I was looking at the video, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I went back to being a 21-year-old, 22-year-old nervous student and thought, oh, I have to talk? I can't talk. I don't know anything about Krishna. And then this morning I woke up and I thought, well, anyway, you have to talk because he's not here physically present with us. And so for that connection, for the flow to continue, we each of us have to take up whatever realization we have, whatever moments of truth we experience, whatever understanding we have gained. We have to take hold of that, and we have to try to give something according to our ability, according to the situation, to others. Because by giving it to others is the only way that it actually becomes like solidified. It's like as if Krishna has reached through all your layers and gone like this, and then there's a solidification where you take it. And now it's part of your psyche, it's part of your soul, it's part of you, so to speak. I don't know the real philosophical terms for this, but it felt like now that's mine. And I won't forget that. And I'll carry that with me till forever. Because I have taken that from Krishna. So, this is the power of hearing, and I found some nice quotes to share with you to strengthen this. So, Srila Prabhupada is speaking here from the example of Narada Muni, and this is interesting because Narada Muni was the one who particularly is mentioned as having spoken about Krishna in the presence of Rukmini Devi. He would come to the palace and he would speak and glorify Krishna, and she heard this. And somehow hearing, of course this is a Leela, she's already the goddess of fortune, but somehow or another in this Leela, by hearing, she became very attracted to Krishna. So Prabhupada says, Narada Muni has just explained these practical facts by his own personal experience in the past. The whole idea is that simply by hearing about the Lord's pastimes, one can become one of the associates of the Lord. One can attain the highest perfection of life simply by attentive hearing of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord from the right sources. This process of hearing in the association of the devotees is specially recommended in this age of quarrel. It's very important to hear about Krishna. If you have less hearing about Krishna in your diet, please add some. It's very, very essential. We're very careful to make our body very healthy. We should make our soul also, or ourselves, very healthy in this way. So the Prabhupada says, if one can understand that his real happiness, lies in giving pleasure to Krishna. Now this sounds so simple. All these statements of Srila Prabhupada sound so simple, but they're so deeply profound. And why are they deeply profound? Because we don't think in this way. Please understand, if you think you think in this way, you're mistaken. And if you feel very unhappy because you don't think in this way, don't feel too unhappy about it, because nobody in the material world thinks in this way. And this is the process to learn to think in this way. Now we are encapsulated within our own universe. Each one of us has their own universe. And who is in the center of that universe? Me. And I look at all of you and the rest of the world and the sky and the stars and the kangaroos and everything else and think, how do these things relate to me? How much happiness can I get from what I can see around me? And if I find myself, I'm not happy, I'm not feeling satisfied, then I immediately think, this is a useless situation for me. I'm not getting any benefit from this. I need something else. So this way we go through our life. Or if I think this is a very good thing, this is a very good thing, such and such. Good for me. Good for me. This is good for me, that is not good for me. So as long as we have a material body, and this will be spoken about in our last class, we're thinking like this. So please understand, if you feel uncomfortable when there's something said by Srila Prabhupada, it doesn't seem to click with where you are, it's true, it doesn't, because this is how we're thinking about me. But if you ever come to the point for a moment where you understand that my life is simply meant for giving pleasure to Krishna, then Lord Krishna takes such a fortunate living being back to his own abode. He takes you out of the material world. You can't get out of the material world. He takes you out of the material world. If you understand this one simple point, which is very difficult to understand. So Prabhupada says, you are searching out friends to talk with, to joke with, to love. Krishna is sitting there in your heart for that purpose, to talk with, to joke with, to love. Do we think of him like that? Or do we think of him, he's the deity in the temple and we have a regulative process and we go in and we do some regular activities And when we finish those activities, we get on with our talking and our joking and our loving. We have to watch this, because as we do sadhana every day, sadhana means practice. As we practice every day, are we practicing mechanically? That I just do, or sometimes it comes to the point, in all honesty, we have to say, I don't do anymore, because it's too difficult to do, or I've never learned to do, or I haven't got to that stage yet, so I don't do. And the other person says, I do do. So we've got the don't do's and the do do's. But do we do it thinking that I am trying to learn to love this personality? He's the supreme personality. I belong to him. Not I, me, and mine. So then, Prabhupada says, Krishna is sitting there for that purpose. If you love Krishna, if you make friendship with Krishna, if you love Krishna, then your life has become successful. You haven't got to search out any other friend. You haven't got to search out any other friend. The friend is already there. Either you are a boy or a girl, you will find a nice friend within yourself. You will find a nice friend within yourself. This is yoga, when you realize that friend. And Srila Prabhupada will go so far as to say, this is the meaning of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is what Krishna consciousness means. To find out that friend. And then to love, to enjoy, to joke with, to dance with, to get on his shoulders, to do everything that we try to do here within my universe for my pleasure with he, she, or they who are in their universe and are only interested in their pleasure. And this relationship never works, because both people, or as many people as you place in a room together, they are all only interested in their own pleasure. And it cannot be otherwise, because it's the material world. It cannot be otherwise. So as long as we remain in the material world, trying to be pious or impious, trying to enjoy, trying to get this, do this, do that, it cannot be otherwise. And then we get frustrated and angry. Why can't it be otherwise? And Krishna just turns his back on you for a while until you get over your little frustration and start again to work in the proper way towards surrender to him. And so this is everybody's challenge. And when we work together on this, then Krishna becomes very, very, very pleased with us. And we make easy and rapid advancement. And if we don't do this, we can make a nice society. We can have so much this, that. But if you can't understand for yourself that I'm developing, my relationship with Krishna is developing, I can perceive it developing, then something is lacking and you have to improve on it. So let's now go to the story of Rukmini. I'm very sorry, I feel very much like I've collected together something that I cannot convey to you because of my own lack of qualification, and we only have an hour and a half, and it's a very deep subject matter. So I feel very much like I'm just skimming the surface of something. So please excuse me for that, but let's see what we can achieve anyway. So Rukmini, some of our acharyas say she was only around about 13 years of age. She was very young. And her father and her other family members were considering her marriage, and they wanted to marry her to Krishna. And Narada Muni had come to the palace of King Bhishmaka, and he had spoken a lot about Krishna, and they were very interested in the idea. But Rukmi, the eldest brother, he was very much under the control of Asuric friends and more powerful Asuric personalities. Specifically, one of the main people who he was very close with was Jarasandha. And Jarasandha, as you may know if you have read the Krishna Lila, was his two daughters were married to Kamsa. And Jarasandha was a very powerful person. He had many, many qualities. He was very charismatic. But he didn't like Krishna. And he felt that Krishna anyway was simply a cowherdsman. He was not a king. He was not somebody chivalrous. He took care of cows. Now, can you see right now how inconceivable Krishna's lila is? That we say, oh, he just takes care of cows. And then we say, this is the person who created all the stars and the moon and the elements of earth, water, fire, air, and so forth. He's all of this, and he takes care of cows. This is very mysterious. So therefore, we always need to hear from the right person. Rukmini heard from Narada Muni. We must hear from Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada is our guardian, and he will take us on this journey towards Krishna if we allow him to do so. So she heard and heard and heard. She set her mind, I want to marry Krishna. Her family members thought it was a very good idea. All the people in the kingdom were secretly talking about this would be so nice. Wouldn't it be wonderful? She's our princess. She should marry. She's so qualified. She's so beautiful. She should be married to the king of Dwarka. And so much discussion was there. But Rukmi, he very, very rigidly didn't want this because he was a friend of Jarasandha. And Jarasandha had fought with Krishna 17 times, and 17 times Krishna had totally defeated him and sent him back to his kingdom. Like, a very insulting thing to do to a Kshatriya is, after you've killed all of his men, you capture him and then you tell him, go. You know, at least kill me. You know, then I died in battle. But no, you can go. And Krishna did like that 17 times. And he went home. He recollected his armies. So this took place maybe over quite a period of time. He collected again many men together. And he came back to Mathura. He fought again. He was defeated again. But he was unabashed. He was totally confident and would come again and again and again. And Krishna would defeat him. He didn't see it. So Rukmi, under his guardianship, he decided that he wanted his sister to marry a cousin of Krishna's, also a Yadu, but actually he had married, the family had gone to the king of, one of the Yadu princesses had married to the king of Chedi Raj, another dynasty in the area, the Vedic area, and the son of Chedi Raj was Sisupal. And Sisupal was Krishna's cousin. Vasudeva's sister had married to Dharmaghosh. So they were cousins. But there was a lot of inimical feeling between them, coming mostly from Sisupal. And Rukmi decided that he would be a better match for Rukmini. So when Rukmini heard this, she was so worried. She did not want to have anything to do with this marriage arrangement. And so she called for a very, very qualified, responsible person who she could fully trust. And she wrote very carefully a letter to Krishna. Now she's a young girl, and she's going to write a letter to Krishna. What will she say, and how will Krishna respond? So please hear. Rukmini wrote this letter and gave it to the Brahmana. The Brahmana took it. He went all the way to Dwarka. He came in. Krishna fed him very nicely, rested him very nicely. When he was rested and seated, he said, now why have you come? And he explained, I have brought this letter. And Krishna said, please read the letter. And Ramana opened the letter and he said, O beauty of the worlds, Bhuvana Sundar, having heard your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear, and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty, which fulfills all the visual desires of those who can see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you. Now, here she says, first, your qualities have entered my ear. I've heard so many of your qualities. And having heard of your beauty, she describes in the Acharyas explain, she explains that having heard of your beauty, I have taken your darshan in my heart. I have seen you. By hearing about you, I have seen you. And by my hearing about you and now having seen you, I am so attracted to you that I have lost all shyness. I am only interested in you. So let me read you something that Prabhupada said to support this. He said one time in a class, there is a television within your heart. So we all know perhaps how alluring television is. Now, even those who are not so interested in watching television, if you put a television on over here, they will come over and they will get allured by it. It's so fascinating. You have one of these within your heart, but unfortunately we usually turn it off. We should learn to turn it on. There is a television within your heart. It is not that you have to purchase a television set. It is there within your heart. And God is there also. You can see Him. You can hear Him. You can talk with Him. Provided you repair the machine. You repair the machine. Not He repairs the machine. You repair the machine. He's already there. You can talk to Him. He's not talking to Princess Rukmini right now. He's talking to us, unworthy souls centered in our own little universe of me and mine. He's talking to us and saying, He's with you already. He wants to talk to you. And this repairing process, provided you repair the machine, how do we repair the machine? The television within the heart with which we can see Krishna. He says, you can see Him, you can hear Him, you can talk with Him, provided you repair the machine. And this repairing of the television within your own heart is done. You require the help of someone expert in the science of Krishna consciousness. To do this repair work, you need a repair man. So when you say you repair the machine, it doesn't mean you repair the machine. It means you get out the tools and you repair the machine, because we all know we can't repair the machine. It means that we call somebody who knows how to repair the machine and we get them to repair the machine. Then the machine in your heart will work and you will be able to see Krishna. If you can prepare yourself, then you can always see Govinda. Prabhupada says, it is not difficult. We feel, don't we feel it's a bit difficult? But Prabhupada is saying, it is not difficult. This is stated in the Brahma Samhita. Simply you have to prepare your eyes and your mind in that way. Here is a television box within your heart. This is the perfection of yoga. If it is not, you have to purchase one machine. It is there. God is there. You can see. You repair it. That's all. Otherwise, everything is supplied. Complete. Complete set of machine. You have gotten already within you. Isn't that amazing? Don't you find that amazing? We have everything already within us. Don't you sometimes feel that you don't have anything? That it's like all over your head and it's too difficult? Krishna consciousness, to be constantly, constantly, constantly trying to remember Krishna seems like a very difficult thing. When you're in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, I remember for myself, the first 1, 2, 3 years of Krishna consciousness, I didn't think it was difficult. I thought it was blissful. And then one day I noticed that there were large gaps in my day and in my week and in my months. that I wasn't thinking about Krishna at all. Even if I was living in the temple, I wasn't actually thinking about Krishna. I had gone off on some other subject. And one time I spoke to the temple president, it was in Los Angeles, and I said to him, it seems like it's really hard to think about Krishna all the time. And he said, your progress will be measured by watching those periods when you don't think about Krishna reduce in size. That's how you'll be able to see if you're making progress. So first I had to see how much I didn't remember Krishna, and that was very embarrassing and disheartening. But then, as I saw that actually now, I go on for a while and then I remember, hey, what am I thinking about? I shouldn't be thinking about that. And I try to draw my mind back towards Krishna. This reducing of that amount of time it takes to remember that I'm supposed to be remembering Krishna is a sign of progress. So we must become aware of these signs, otherwise we'll become confused and think, I'm not getting anywhere. Because in one sense, we're getting from minus, 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 minus a million, minus 900, minus 100, minus is a debt. Right? And then we get to zero. It still doesn't feel great. You just think, if you've got a debt of $1 million, you know, now you've got $1,000, still it's like paying off a debt isn't pleasurable. You still feel I've got nothing. But in transcendental life, while you're paying off your debt of forgetfulness of Krishna, you do have something. Because Krishna is noting it. And he's ready to reciprocate with you all the time. And gradually, as we get less and less fascinated by the world around us as a separate field of enjoyment, and we start to see that the world around us is meant actually for serving him. It's his. It's meant for serving him. Now we're getting pluses. We're starting to come up. But reducing the minuses is a big plus in Krishna consciousness. So we should not become confused. But Rukmini says to Krishna, in this she says, now she knows that Krishna might say, who is this young girl who's writing me like this and asking me to marry her? I've never met her and she's so bold to write like this. So she explains to Krishna, see, she's thinking all the time. This is how we have to learn how to think. She's thinking, Krishna might say this and then I would say this. But her thinking is like in terms of Krishna, not I might say this and they might say this and then I would tell them this and it's only in terms of me, but she's thinking in terms of Krishna. So she's thinking, Krishna might say like this, who is this girl? And of course so many people are attracted to me, why should I, and why is she approaching me like this? So she will say to Krishna then that your good qualities are there and my ears are there. Your good qualities are the cause of my becoming shameless, and my ears are the cause of becoming shameless. So both of us are at fault. So you can't criticize me because of my ears, because you've got these good qualities, and I can't criticize you because I've got these ears. So therefore I've become shameless, and you can't criticize me for this. You please listen instead to my request. So then she says to Krishna, O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself. And she gives a list, and it's interesting, if you listen to this list, I'll read them slowly, you think about them, and these are all the things that we're interested in our material life, in the material world. She says, you are equal only to yourself, that means no one can equal you, in Kula. In terms of family background, because we're very interested in our family, but you are superior in this realm. You are superior and equal only to yourself in character, good character, in rupa or beauty, in vidya or knowledge. There is no one who has knowledge like Krishna. There is no one beautiful like Krishna. In dravina, or property, there is no one who owns as much as Krishna owns, and therefore also who cannot take care of us well. Or dambi, influence. Krishna is very powerful. Now all these things, if you happen to be a television watcher or an internet surfer, you'll find yourself coming across powerful, attractive, intelligent, charismatic personalities that the world is pointing to and saying, look at this person, look what they've done, look what they've done, look what this one has done. And many people are going, ah. But we should learn to say, uh-huh, but look at this. Look what Krishna has done. Krishna should become more real and more attractive to us every day. She says, O Mukundi, O equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion amongst men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time came? So if Krishna says, yes, I have all these good qualities, so everybody knows I have these good qualities, everybody is attracted to me, why should I specially give you this? She says, that's true, everyone is attracted to you, and I am too, so you should give it to me. You see, you have to become very intelligent in Krishna consciousness. And then he says, but you know, he gives some reason, and she says, because my time has come now. And notice she calls him lion amongst men. In the next prayer she says, therefore, my Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Please come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, may Sisupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal who is stealing the booty from a lion. So first she's pointing out, you are the lion amongst men, and now this jackal is going to try and marry me, and come quickly because the time is very, very short. Please come and save me from this. I have surrendered myself to you. Please come and save me. So she's saying to Krishna, let me know, please, if you will come and save me, because I will live or die according to your instruction. If you will not come and save me, that's all right. I will take poison, or I will fast and die immediately. So this quality of love, where do you find it? Where do you find it? Do we feel like that? Or are we self-centered? And I want, I want, I want. How are we going to learn how to sacrifice like that to come to this level unless we learn how to love Krishna? So then Krishna might say to her, she's thinking, he might say, oh, your love for me, so-called love for me, is very motivated. You want me as your husband. What about Bali Maharaj? He gave everything to me and he had no motivation. So your love is inferior. She's thinking this. And then I will say, it is true that my love and Bali Maharaj's love is different. Because Bali Maharaj had no intense loving prema for you. He was just giving everything, but he didn't have prema. And I have so much love for you. So my love is so much superior to Bali Maharaj's love. So you must come and respond to my care, my appeal for you. And then she says to him, in her thinking as she's saying this, if Sisupal touches me, what loss of prestige it will be for you with the lion amongst men. If Sisupal takes this treasure that has been given to you, so you should not lose your prestige. Now this is interesting. She says, if I have sufficiently worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now this is a good answer to the piety question yesterday that you were asking, Sweta. What is piety? Now, there's a very interesting point here. Now, these extra points that are not there in the Srimad Bhagavatam and they're not there in the Krishna book, they come from the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, upon whom most of the Krishna book and the Bhagavatam commentaries are based anyway. So they're very interesting to read these little details because they embellish and they increase the detailedness of our sense of who Krishna is. And the more we can feel who Krishna is, the more we will become attracted to him. This is what Princess Rukmini is trying to say. So she gives another list here. She gave a list of the qualities of Krishna that nobody is equal to him. Now she gives a list of worship, of activities, pious activities. She says, if I have sufficient purta, or pious works, such as, and she gives a list, such as digging wells, performing sacrifices, charity, observing ritual observances such as visiting holy places, accepting vratas or vows of penance, deva, worshipping the demigods, worshipping brahmanas, worshipping the spiritual master by doing deity worship, or any other activities. If I have performed sufficient of any of these things. Now, interestingly, the acharyas tell us that she said to Krishna in her own heart, if I have done these things for your pleasure, or I've done them unknowingly for my own pleasure, whatever reason I did them, I now offer them all to you. Whatever I have done, she says, if I have sufficiently done these things, then may Gadadgraja come and take my hand and not Dhammaghosha's son or anyone else. She said, I don't want anyone else, not Narayan, Lord Narayan, no. The demigods, no. Any human being, no. I only want you. And whether I have done these things, in what she knows that you cannot attain Krishna's favor. The acharya's comment saying, Rukmini felt that no one could attain Krishna by the efforts of a single lifetime. Therefore, she earnestly pointed out all her pious activities that she had performed in that life and all the previous ones. She's trying now to draw on all her assets. I may have done anything good I ever did for anyone. Please now may that be the cause of your coming to save me. And nobody but you I want. She's hoping to convince Krishna to come. So at this particular point of her letter, she's pointing out what I have done in the past. Maybe I have enough sukriti or piety that it will draw your attention so you will come to see me. And later she will say, if I haven't, I'll tell you what I am prepared to do. She says, now she starts, because she's a princess, she's politically intelligent. She's just going to give Krishna a plan how he can do this. She's very intelligent. She says, unconquerable one, tomorrow when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen by others. And then you should surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaitya, Dhammaghosh, Sisupal, and Magendra, Jarasandha, and marry me in the Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor. So she's telling Krishna how to do it. How does she get to tell him how to do it? Only because she loves him so much. We want to tell Krishna how to do it. Please protect me. Please give me this. Please take that away. Please fix this up. Please move this over here. Please make my life like... Please get this and this and this for me. And Krishna doesn't respond. Sometimes we get it. Sometimes we don't get it. I was thinking one day, because sometimes you look back on your previous life, you know, your practices, and you look towards the present. And I was thinking, when I was much younger, when I was living in Vrindavan, which was many years ago now, I had a really strong feeling, it is like sort of like a little embarrassing to say, but I used to think it's really difficult to pray to Krishna because sometimes he answers and sometimes he doesn't. You know, and I don't know if he will or won't. You know, doesn't seem to be any reason why he does or doesn't. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. So I don't think that's a very solid way to get to know him by appealing to him. He seems to be a little indifferent, or he has his back to me, or something, or he's a little hard of hearing, or something, or I just get the right words, or you know, he looks at me and goes, you know, and I felt like that. And then I noticed that, this was not so long ago, and I thought, but now I don't feel like that. Now I find there's always reciprocation. So what has changed? Has Krishna changed? Is he sort of like he's got his act together? Or have I got my act together? Have I started turning to him in a different way? In a deeper way? In a more sincere way? In a way that my prayers are actually intelligent? Because if you think for a minute, most of the, you know, the conditioned soul and the I, me and mine universe, what they're very interested in is making their universe run well. Right? So please protect my children, please protect my mother, my father, my auntie, my uncle, please make my job work well, please. It's all within this universe I'm praying. But what I'm seeking is really lasting happiness. But within this universe that I live in, everything is always changing because I'm within the material energy. Everything minutely, Prabhupada said, every moment a blood corpuscle is changing. Every 7 years the whole body has changed. Everything is in a state of change. And so what I'm praying for mostly is an impossibility. I'm praying that Krishna could make me, as God of my universe, happy, peaceful, and in control. So he remains silent because I cannot be that. And as I start to become more sensible and I start realizing that I should be praying, please help me to serve you, despite the fact that I'm thinking, please help me this, please help me, that's all still going on. But what is rising up is, please help me to serve you, despite the fact that my mind is going here and there and everywhere. As that comes up, then naturally Krishna can reciprocate with that because he can do that. But he cannot make me God because I am inherently a servant. So I'm at odds with him. So he remains silent. And when I start not being at odds with him, he's very, very loving, and incredibly he can speed up and accelerate our advancement so much when that's what we want. So if you do feel like that ever, that prayer, I don't know, he doesn't seem always to like me or give me what I need or want, maybe you're wanting something that it's not going to give you happiness anyway. And even if you get it, you'll want something else immediately because it won't work. It inherently won't work because of the nature of matter and you being a soul. So she's telling him, do it this way. He said, yes, I will accept, I will come and get you. And she's saying, do it this way. This is the best way. Why? Because she points out that she anticipated a possible objection on Krishna's part. He would be thinking, you're inside the palace. If I come into the palace to get you, then I will have to kill so many of your family members because they will all stop me. So she says, since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I will tell you, there is a way. There's a way. She's worked it out. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. So Srila Prabhupada points out that royal families often worshipped some form of Durga Devi for their material well-being. They worship Lord Narayan for their spiritual elevation, but sometimes they also worshipped Durga Devi to make sure there were no impediments in the material side of their lives. So of course this is not recommended to somebody who is becoming a pure Vaishnava, who is on the path of pure bhakti. But this was a social tradition. So she says that, I lost my page. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to worship the goddess Girija. So this is the best time. So she is thinking that this is ideal for Krishna. So then she's thinking also, but maybe he will not accept this. Maybe he won't answer my prayer. You see, if I'm thinking maybe Krishna won't answer my prayer, even Rukmini is thinking like that. Because we are all dependent on the independent mercy of the Lord. We can never control him. He is a supreme independent. He is the master of everything, including ourselves. And we become happy when we subordinate ourselves in our natural position. So she says, O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, if I cannot get it, if you will not come, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penances that I am about to perform. And then, so this is where we see the difference very clearly between Princess Rukmini and ourselves. She says, then, after hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. So she's not giving up. And she's not going to get confused if Krishna doesn't come. She's clear what she will do. I will not accept this situation. I will give up my life and I will continue to serve and to serve and to serve because I want only you. And this is what Krishna consciousness is meant to come to. Up, 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 up. To the point that we can say clearly, I want only you. It's interesting to note in the prayers of Queen Kunti Devi, how she had, her sons are all the great Pandavas, great devotees. But for the time that they were in exile, for 13 years that they were in exile, Kunti Devi didn't go. The first exile she went with them, but the second time she did not go. So she was in Hastinapur while they were away for 13 years. What was she doing? She was performing so many austerities and vrats and so much devotional activities during that time that then, after the battle of Kurukshetra, when Krishna is about to leave, she says, take away the attachment to my family, please. I just want my love to flow towards you. I remember reading that verse many times and thinking, well, she doesn't need to take away her attachment because the Pandavas are great devotees, so we don't need to take away the attachment. But the attachment that they are mine, this is the difficulty. This is mine, this is mine, this is mine. That is the illusion. The attachment to somebody as a great devotee is one thing, but they're my family members. That's what she was asking. This sentiment, please release me from this. Once Srila Prabhupada said something I thought was astonishing. He was talking, I don't know whether it was in India or America, but he said there is one good quality, having criticized the American so-called culture so much, the Western culture and how they behave and glorifying the Vedic culture so much and even glorifying Indian culture, Indian culture being distinct from Vedic culture, glorifying and glorifying. And then in one place only, I remember hearing him say that there is one good thing about the Western culture. And ironically, it's not a thing that we consider very good. He said, is that they have broken any attachment to family. He said, this is the greatest obstacle to Krishna consciousness. So when I heard that, I felt a little bit guilty. But then soon after that, Srila Prabhupada explained, to balance it, to put it into perspective, that without stability of family, there's no stability within society. So then he would go back and point to the culture where everybody has forgotten and become ungrateful to their families and don't care about their families, and points out all the instability and all the insecurity of the individuals concerned, and again glorifies the basis of family, of structure, in order to become stable materially and then spiritually. But if you don't become advanced spiritually, then you sink on the weight, the rock of family attachment. You sink down into the waters of material consciousness very quickly. So for those of us who are serious in practicing Krishna consciousness, we have a balancing act to perform. And when we go a bit this way, we have to then go a bit this way. We have to be responsible. We can't be irresponsible. We have to be detached. We can't be too attached. We have to be caring. We can't be too non-caring. We have to consider the future. We have so many things. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, when you see him on the screen as we did last night, he's very grave, and he talks about this being a life of responsibility. As a devotee, it is a life of responsibility, trying to balance and do all of these things. Okay, so she has said... This is also very interesting. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, this is what Rukmini is saying. It is my eagerness to see your beautiful lotus eyes, which is the cause of all the difficulties that I am suffering. There you have it. The difference between she and we. It is my eagerness to see your beautiful lotus eyes, which is the cause of all these difficulties I am suffering. This is a change of consciousness. And we are on that journey. So we cannot get there without past piety. But if we have no piety, I remember one time right here in Melbourne actually, in Elwood, Srila Prabhupada was staying in a house rented by some one of the devotees in the temple. And he was sitting on the floor behind his table, and had nice white sheets on the carpet. And he was talking to it was a darshan. And we were all sitting there, all earnest and eager and excited and young. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining that if somebody controls their senses until they're 25 years of age and they have no sex life, then they become so intelligent and so fertile for spiritual life. And he was going on giving this glorious description, and then it becomes so easy, on and on and on. And I remember sitting there, and he sort of like, without looking, as if you have eyes in the side of your head, you kind of note that no one in the room has done this. You haven't done it, and no one else has done it as well. So you're sort of sitting there, and there was no pious Indians in the room, just a bunch of enthusiastic young people. And Srila Prabhupada is speaking, and he says, and then he stopped, and everyone in the room, including myself, was sort of going, because it looked like we were hopeless. We didn't have any qualification. He's talking, he's so exquisitely refined, and he's talking about this high level, and it's easy, and here we are, we've fumbled in upon his association with all list of bad habits and bad experiences. And then he looked around the room and he said something to the effect that he was going to take care of all of us. He would arrange the piety that was required to actually become Krishna conscious. And I remember it was so endearing, because it was again one of those moments that you come to a peak of anxiety And at that peak point is the release, not before. You don't want to be anxious, but you're getting more and more anxious. It's getting more and more difficult. And only at that highest point does Krishna reveal himself. So Srila Prabhupada had made us all feel very ashamed, and then because we were feeling too ashamed, he re-encouraged us that, don't worry, I am taking care of you all. So this was Princess Rukmini's letter, and she presented this to Krishna through the Brahman, and the Brahman told Krishna in confidence. They studied together the auspicious time of her marriage, and it was only 2 days away. I don't know how long it took the Brahmana to get from Kundina to Dwarka, but Krishna had 2 days, and the Brahman said, if you want to do anything, you have to do it immediately. And so Krishna thought, and he told the Brahmana that actually I also am very much attracted to Princess Rukmini. In fact, sometimes I cannot even sleep thinking about her, and I know that she is meant for me, and I will immediately come. And so then he called Satyaki, who was his chariot driver, and he told him to yoke the chariot. And Krishna has 4 wonderful horses that can go at extraordinary speed. And Krishna yoked his chariot, and then he and the Brahmana set off immediately. He didn't tell anyone. He was a little shy, perhaps, to tell Balaram where he was going. So he didn't tell anyone. He took off immediately with the Brahmana to get there, and they took all night. And that's a very short journey even by train, because this is all of Gujarat that you have to traverse to get to Kundina, which is in Maharashtra. And so then they arrived there, and Krishna told the Brahmana to now go and tell Rukmini that he had arrived. So this afternoon we'll hear what happened next. Now, if anyone has any questions, we have some extra time. So please, if you have, if not, I will read you some more quotes. Yes,
generally, devotees feel that they have less love for Krishna than other devotees. So it's interesting that here Rukmini Devi is saying that I have more love than Hari Maharaj.
That's what she was saying. I've become shameless. I've set aside everything, all rules, everything. I want you. This is the stage that one has to come to. If we do that artificially, if we become bad-mannered, that's different than what she's doing. I just like to say, this is called eagerness. And Prabhupada says, this is what we have to develop, eagerness. Everything else is done by Krishna. Krishna arranges everything. If we're eager, we see him arranging and we become more and more eager. If we're not eager, it's like if I provide you with so much to eat, but you've just had your breakfast. It doesn't really matter. You'll say thank you and you probably put it to the side. You know, somebody gives you a birthday present and it's something you just bought. You know, it's almost embarrassing because you already have that thing, and now somebody's given you, you've got to respond, thank you. You know, but you're not eager for that. But if somebody gives you something and that's just what you've always been wanting and you couldn't get it anywhere. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how it took him about 8 or 12 years of searching to find a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was so eager to find that book, but he couldn't find it anywhere. And we have the Chaitanya Charitamrita here, there, in everybody's rooms and houses, on your mobile phone, on your computer. How often do you read it? How often do we read it? We collect stuff. And we think, I need this. Everyone has this. I want it too. We collect it and collect it and collect it. And how often do you read it? 2 days ago, my daughter said to me, see, I love my phone. She showed me the phone. She said, I've got everything on this phone. I've got all the apps. Everything's on my phone. And I said, oh. And she said, look, see. She was showing me this thing, that thing. You know, the weather is on my phone. The calculator is on my phone. I can do all the different measurements on my phone. She went on and on and on and on and on. And then she said, and look, I've got the Chaitanya Charitamrita on my phone. And clicked on and showed it to me. And I said, do you ever read it? She said, no, it's too small. And know, I had a little chuckle because I thought we're all like that. You know, not to speak behind someone's back, but practically that's how the modern world is. I have to have it, I have to have it, I have to have it. Or do we do anything with it? No, I just have to have it. The latest, the most, the this, the that. And we're running, running, running to get the latest, the most, the this, the that, and not miss out. And this is passion, and this is what is now so predominant in the world. Previously, goodness was predominant. In Vedic times, goodness was predominant. And when goodness is predominant, like you're saying, there's this type of humility, there's a type of sattva gun is very calming, and people don't want, they're not wanting all the time. So at that time, people had houses made out of wood, and temples were built out of stone. And temples were full of all kinds of details and beauty and so forth. And people lived very, very simply. And they didn't mind that. That was kind of how you live. And now, exactly the opposite. Everyone has to have their own beautiful house and has to be modern, have to have this and that and buy it in this place and that place and new furniture and on and on and on and on and on. And everybody's house is like a kind of a bigger universe and they don't have any time to go to the temple. Right? And Krishna can come into my universe if he wants. Come, I worship you when I have time, but I've got to work very hard. I've got two jobs to pay all this off. You see, I've got a mortgage and I've got this and I've got that and my family are really happy about this and my. This is a mode of passion. So Rukmini wasn't passionate when she was saying this. It wasn't coming from ego. This is transcendental passion. This is rag or anurag. And Krishna says, it is my nature that when someone approaches me with anurag, that means with eagerness for him, I can never turn them down, no matter who they are. So one drop of that eagerness is priceless. It's priceless. And all the passion of modern society is really basically a headache. And it's just Kali Yuga doing Kali Yuga's work. It's how it is. You can't fight it. But if you can get some of that really real eagerness, that really real feeling of wanting Krishna, then you're a very fortunate person no matter who you are. And Krishna will respond. So she's speaking from that level, Sweta. Not from the sadhana level that, oh, I'm very great and I love Krishna more than you and you and you and you. No, that is not our mood here. Yes.
As you were talking about sometimes how we pray to the Lord that keep my job situation well, my place situation well. So that now when we recently read the pastime of Vrtasura and how the demigods are praying to the Lord to save them from Vrtasura, and Prabhupada writes commentary that devotees are sorry the demigods are Sakama devotees, Sakama Bhaktas. And then also somewhere else we heard that Srila Prabhupada said that but devotees are not Sakama. We can consider demigods in this context as Sakama. But we also pray to the Lord saying that under a set of circumstances my devotional life, under a set of material circumstances, my devotional life will flourish better. Otherwise there is a chance that I may lose my track and even possibly lose faith if too much misery is there. So how do we reconcile? Because on one hand, even being Sakama devotees, the demigods are able to have darshan of God. He's coming personally in front of them and they are able to interact with the Lord. But a devotee is obviously, the, at least a person like me, who never had any hope of darshan of the Lord. That's it. Of course, we are seeing the Archarija. So there is an interaction and here is an interaction.
There's so many injunctions for so many levels, and sometimes on whatever level we're at, if we keep in touch with that, if we keep our Krishna conscious active and vital, we'll find something that's inspiring for us. And then years and years later, you might read the same injunction, and you don't find that inspiring at all anymore. You don't even note it, but you note something else. So the reason I say that is because on the very broadest level, Krishna is so much, as we heard last night on the video, Srila Prabhupada was saying, Krishna has a very big plan to get everyone to come back to him. So on the broadest level, we're told that if you have a desire, if you have no desire, if you want moksha, whatever you want, whoever you are, whatever you want, just come to me. I'll take care of you. So this is a first level instruction, and sometimes it applies to us in certain situations that we can pray to Krishna, please, I need this, I want this, either like the demigods, we're praying in one way, or we can be praying, as you're saying, please, I don't know if I have enough strength, if this happens, that happens, please protect me and make my situation stable. We can pray like that, and there are injunctions that you can place yourself under so that you're doing something towards your Krishna consciousness. However, Krishna consciousness itself, we must understand what we're actually trying to achieve, or we'll get stuck somewhere and we'll stay there, or we'll preach that and we'll just make a little kind of a, we're trying to get to here and we'll just make a little kind of a mound over here, and we'll even attract people to that level of consciousness, which really isn't the highest level of Krishna consciousness. So you can assume, first of all, when Srila Prabhupada is speaking, when he says devotees, you know, there's a saying, what is it, Atmavan Manyate Jagat? One sees everyone as being like themselves. So when Prabhupada says things like, it's not at all difficult, and we look back at him, you know, because he's speaking from his own perspective. When he says devotees don't have material desires, he's speaking from his own perspective, for it's a Vaishnava. Therefore, we have to hear from him, because what that does is it puts our mental limiting selfish tendencies into perspective of what they are, so that we can go beyond them. So whether Krishna has appeared to you, I'm just speaking very bluntly, don't mind, or not, is not at all important. The only thing that's important is pleasing him. This is the highest level. And the demigods, if they're pleasing him in some way and he appears to them in some way, but they still have material desires, that's where they are. If he chooses to appear to them, that's his business if he wants to appear to them. But our business is to somehow or other transcend all selfish motivation and come to a point of understanding that there's only one person I need in my life, and it's you. And it's so high. Right? It's so high. And so many things are going on in our mind. And sometimes we can dovetail them into our Krishna consciousness. Like, as you're saying, please help I do this all the time. Please help me with my, please help make my family all peaceful so that I won't lose my Krishna consciousness. But it's really me, kind of. It's really quite selfish, you know. Isn't it? It's like, I feel after I pray like that or think like that, I feel a little bit not very satisfied with myself, because there's a mix. That's what it is. There's a mix. So at the bottom level, there's so much mix. There's 90% mix of selfishness and a tiny spark of Krishna consciousness, and we give that credit and we encourage that and we fan that and we encourage those persons who are coming like that. This is wonderful. You've started the fire of Krishna consciousness. But if they stay there and 10 years later you see them and they're still sort of at the same spot, you feel like, oh, they should be coming up. They should be coming a bit more, balance should be shifting. And same with ourselves. We should be thinking, hang on, there must be something wrong with that prayer, because I should be just thinking whatever you want. If you want, whatever you want to do, give me the strength. An advanced transcendentalist on any path, really advanced, they don't pray like that. They pray like, please give me the strength to suffer whatever I'm meant to suffer in order to serve you. Now, I don't pray like that. I'm not on that level yet. But I see that level as far higher than the level that I'm on now, whether I'm here. And when you get to the top level, you hear this: I just want you, there's no one else that I want to serve. Please come and take me away. And Krishna comes immediately. So we're meant to be going up, 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 transcending these lower levels and coming higher. Wherever we are, it's good, but we should be going on further. And hearing Srila Prabhupada speak was very humiliating, because he was up here already. And he would say things like, there is no difficulty, what is the difficulty? You'd come into the room, you have a darshan, you sit down. I remember we came in 1974 to Australia. We'd been in Hong Kong and we had so many difficulties, and we'd left our service and come to Australia, and we knew we shouldn't have done that. And so many things, we were very confused. And we come into the room and Srila Prabhupada says, what is the difficulty? What is your problem? That's it. What is your problem? And you go, it was almost impossible to say. You know, you couldn't say it in front of him, because he saw things so totally differently. He had so much, as we saw in the slideshow yesterday, he was a steel-framed, humble servant. There was nothing else going on. There is nothing else going on. So if we connect to that, we'll go up. We'll have the strength. We won't not have the strength. We'll have the strength even if the whole thing goes woof, woof, woof. We'll still have the strength. Until we get there, we pray like we pray. But this is pure devotional service. And that's what Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas are telling us. You're on the path of pure devotional service, not motivated devotional service. And the perfection of Krishna consciousness is when you totally, fully depend and love Krishna. This is what Krishna consciousness is meant for, and sometimes we take our Krishna consciousness practices for something else, and they don't work very well. You know, sometimes take them for peaceful life, you know, or good character, or overcoming some fault, or something like that. And then we find that actually if you go on the internet, there's a better way to do that. Somebody's written a book about it, and you get the book, and you overcome your fault, or you do whatever, make your life peaceful. Because that's not what Krishna consciousness is meant for. They're byproducts. They may come, they may not come. That wasn't what Prabhupada was offering us. He was offering us this opportunity which nobody else knows about. You can go on to Google all day and night and you'll never find anyone who knows this. How to learn to love Krishna. Limited, yes, a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of it, here, there, something. But Prabhupada was only focusing on that. But this is what he's offering to us. Yes.
Mataji, generally we see that Rukmini is always worshipped with the Panduram Krishna.
Yes.
We don't usually see the worship of Rukmini with the Shamsundar
Krishna. Yes. I read one time where Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna Leela takes place in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Vasudev Leela takes place in Mathura and Dwarka. But Vasudev is within Krishna. But Krishna's Leela only takes place in Vrindavan. So in purest sense, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So Shyamasundar Krishna with the peacock feather and the flute, he never leaves Vrindavan. And when we worship him in Melbourne, or we worship him in India, or we worship him in Russia, we worship him in China, Srila Prabhupada explained, we worship in the mood of reverence that's like Vasudeva Krishna. Because archana is performed in a reverential way to Krishna's form. So in Dwarka, it's Vasudev Krishna, and he has so many leelas. And in Vrindavan, there only Krishna wears a peacock feather. He doesn't wear a peacock feather on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, actually. He doesn't play his flute in Dwarka. Those things are saved only for his Vrindavan pastimes. That's why we don't worship him in the mood of Shyamasundar Krishna when he's kidnapping Princess Rukmini. Does that... answer your question or offer another question?
But what's the significance of the Panduram form of Krishna? What is the relationship of Panduram with Rukmini?
Yes.
Any other form of Krishna?
Yeah. I have to admit, I'm a Vrindavan person. I don't know. You'll have to ask someone from Gujarat or Maharashtra. Perhaps they have the actual power to understand that particular form. Yes. We've got two here.
You are mentioning in the beginning of the lecture that when Prabhupada used to speak, because he is speaking at that level, and we are not at that level, so it brings out that feeling of, the feeling slowly rises that I'm not...
Anxiety.
And then it comes to the peak when you can really absorb whatever Prabhupada is saying. So, what is that feeling? Is that feeling of anxiety, it's a feeling like guilt that, okay, I'm not at that level? Many things.
Guilt, it's an embarrassment, but it's not to do... I may be embarrassed in the group of devotees that they know more than me. That may also be a symptom. But really, it's like, I can't really relate to this. I'm a devotee, but I actually can't relate to what he's saying. And he keeps saying, you cannot do something and I'm doing it. And where am I? Where's my status as a devotee? It's a complete kind of a sense of disorientation. Because he's presenting another vision of reality than the one I live with and work with and believe in. He's saying this, and I'm doing and thinking like this. That at a certain point it strikes you that if you're listening carefully, if you're not, and if you're mature enough, we were very young, so it didn't necessarily strike everyone, but it always struck me that I'd go through this experience at a certain point that, my gosh, I can't really relate. It's Prabhupada, but I can't really relate to what he's actually offering. And then, at that point, if I stayed with it, I would have to say, then what's the use of your Krishna consciousness unless you can relate to him? There had to be a force that pushed you to that sincerity. It wasn't just that you feel disoriented and then you feel great. But there was a process that had to take shape, that it is Prabhupada, I have to accept him. He knows, I don't know. I'm the one at fault. How can I actually accept what he's saying? And then I would feel, that, okay, I surrender. I don't know what to do. And then after that, there would be a moment of very intimate sense. He's speaking the same things, but all of a sudden there's no resistance. There's no yes, but, or, oh, I don't know about that, or the mind is not talking to me. There's no interference from my side. So how can we do that? We should. Do you ever find when you pick up the Bhagavad Gita cold? You know, you've had a busy day and pick up Bhagavad Gita. You sometimes feel like putting it down again. Does anyone have that feeling? Yes. Well, don't put it down. There you go. Take the challenge. I feel like I'm going to put this down. The mind says, put it down. You can't concentrate on this right now. You've been so busy with this, and this, and it's going to make you feel really uncomfortable because you're going to see what a bad devotee you are and everything. Don't read it. You hear it, become conscious of the voice of the mind, and hold it, at least even hold it for 5 seconds longer before you put it down. You've made some progress because that forgetfulness has just become a little shorter before you noticed, oh, I'm completely in Maya right now. And I did something. I picked it up. Now, you might not be able to. You might be so advanced that you pick it up, you read it, and all your illusions disappear. But do something. If you can't do that, do something. Always do something when you realize that your mind is telling you, no, I can't. Do something to push back that resistance within the mind and the false ego. That if you learn to use that, it suddenly becomes very powerful. It becomes like you wait those moments. I talked to someone once who said, something happened to me and I was feeling so angry at all the devotees and I was feeling like Krishna's so unkind. I'm trying to serve him and so many things are going wrong. And I said to them, oh yes, I feel so embarrassed when I think like that. And they said to me, I don't feel embarrassed when I think like that. I feel like, oh, thank you, Krishna. You're exposing to me where I really stand. And so I feel like, oh, thank you. And I, you know, because I want to know. And I was really embarrassed because I was thinking, I didn't want to know. But they were saying, I want to know because I want to make advancement. So we want to become like that. I want my false ego to become crushed by Krishna. As we'll hear how Sisipal and everybody were crushed by Krishna. I want that. And then sometimes you have to say, I honestly don't want that. I look at myself and I can't find a single drop of sincerity. But I'm still coming to you shamelessly because I've somehow or other done some devotional activities that leave me with a sense that even though I don't want it, I'm putting myself forward for your purification. And be very honest rather than saying, oh, you know, be very honest with Krishna because he knows already. He's hearing everything. Get to know him. Get to know him. You'll see. He's so wonderful. And as Prabhupada said, he's there. The television is there. Everything is there. It just needs to be repaired.
Is that the feeling that will stop us from becoming morose because of this? Because sometimes you can go into that moroseness, so I'm such a bad devotee.
You can't avoid the moroseness because it's true. You are a bad devotee. You can't avoid it. You know, like if you're thinking, oh my goodness, I'm a bad devotee. Oh no, you are a bad devotee. And I think that's the point where the breakthrough comes. You know, I'd be so morose, I'd look around the room, everyone's sitting there and they're all looking inspired and looking at Prabhupada and I'm just feeling like dirt, you know, and then I'm thinking, oh, I'm such a bad devotee. And then when I actually say, yes, I'm a bad devotee, but still I need your mercy. And it's not a mental thing, you know, like I just intellectually say, oh, I'm a bad devotee and I need your mercy. But I've just been exposed to myself. And I've seen in Vrindavan, if you don't accept it when Krishna exposes you to yourself, then he exposes you to everyone. And quickly you learn. When he exposes you to yourself, say, yes, yes, it's true, I'm a really bad devotee, thank you. Oh, please help me. Instead of saying, that's not me, I'm not like that, I'm a really nice person, I don't have any problems, I don't know what this is all about. It's their problem, they said this and this and this. Then he'll say, okay, is he really like that? Yes! And then you've got to hear it from outside because you won't hear it from inside. So learn to hear it from inside to save yourself a little embarrassment. And even they don't even know what's going on, but you know, this is between me and Krishna and he's just done a, you know. Someone walks up to you and just like gives you a whole list of things and they're just what you were hearing from inside. They've come from the out now. But this is Krishna's mercy. He's trying to get us to that point. Surrender. What's so special about you? Good or bad? Are you specially bad? Are you specially good? That you can't surrender? What's the problem? And then you go, oh, there's so many problems and promises. There is no difficulty. So we have to learn how to surrender, how to surrender, how to trust Krishna. And it becomes easier as we make spiritual advancement. So we should be encouraged about that, but we shouldn't wait and say, oh, when it's easier, I'll do it. We should try and do it now. Take baby steps. All right, one last question. We have to finish late on.
Rukmini Devi, she heard about Krishna and she started loving him.
Yes.
She got that, you know, feeling.
Yes.
So we also hear... we also read, but then what special or what things we need to have to develop that love?
We have to have, like Srila Prabhupada was saying, everything that, it was interesting watching him last night, you were here? We had a little video excerpt of Srila Prabhupada and so many things that he was saying were so pertinent because really he's always saying the same thing. He's saying how to love Krishna. So we have to have practice. Without practice, without some detachment from the material world, without some positive practice, then our bhakti doesn't really develop. It just remains like an elephant taking his bath. He takes a bath and then he throws all the dirt all over him again and off he goes. So that's our tendency. We go to the temple, we have some kirtan, we feel really good, and we go home and we think about all kinds of stuff. So there has to be some, we have to become trained, we have to practice. And some people think, okay, because I think all kinds of stuff, it's my family that's the problem, so I've got to get rid of my family, or I've got to get rid of my job. And Krishna didn't say that to Arjuna. He said, no, you have to change your consciousness. And we said, that's so hard. He said, I don't care. This is what you have to learn to do. You have to learn to see me in the family. You have to do it for me. You have to learn. And then we have to ask, well, what do I need to do that? And we'll suddenly realize, oh, I have to hear more about Krishna. And then when you listen to something about Krishna, it'll be totally different than the hearing without that, without the practice. You have to feel, I have to practice. And to practice, I'm going to have to hear. And vice versa. And then it becomes alive. I'm holding everybody's breakfast up and Keshava has appeared with a very serious knowing smile on his face. So we should continue on with that. Thank you. These are very valuable points, and I was hoping, as I said, to have you hear the Leela as a Leela, not think of it as something that's going to help me with my own worldly life, but to hear about Krishna because we're meant to be attracted to go there. But also automatically we'll hear that hearing will also make all the worldly problems diminish as well. Because we'll get the anxiety that Rukmini was having. All her difficulties were only one thing, that I'm so anxious to see you, that's the cause of my difficulty. Then we're very fortunate. Thank you.